For me, my everywhere is kind of the Discord side of things, where I've been really building and focusing on my community. In our community, we're working on a newsletter to just even have more autonomy and ownership of like the people who've, you know, trusted us with their time. This is what I enjoy, and there's an audience here, and they are asking me these questions that need answers. That's a much better spot to be in. Yeah, and I feel that that alone is one of the strengths of the creator space that I've been fortunate enough to be a part of for so long too.
Hello and welcome to the Polyan Content Creator Spotlight. I have Andrew Kahn here. He is a film director, YouTube educator, and content creator. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's like I always say, if I can, you can too. So thank you for having me on the show.
Andrew Kahn, not Andrew Kahn.
It is. Yeah. It is.
So one way I like to break the ice doing interviews is to have you share something about yourself that no one knows about you.
Oh, that's a really good question. One thing that not a lot of people know is that growing up, I had a lot of animals. So at one point, I can say within my life, I've had over 100 dogs, cats, etc. So a lot of people don't expect that.
Yeah.
So that is one thing you may not know about me, which is why I love animals so much to this day.
I love that. And I love that question too, because it just makes everything else easy at the end of it. But it also usually highlights something that just like people are like, whoa, I did not know that. And it humanizes people more too. And I just really love that.
No, for sure.
So we were talking a little bit before the call, and just as content creators, we love this subject. You and I have been talking on Discord quite a bit. You're building a community on there. We met through Opus Discord. And it's just one of those things where being able to meet other creators has just been so exciting for me. I went to my first conference this year, got to meet people who are like-minded, and I love doing this show now because I get to meet like-minded people. And so I just wanted to start off with, what got you started as a content creator?
For me, I always had liked storytelling because I think it's one of the easiest and best ways to connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
I've always found film and media like that very interesting. It's something I've always wanted to do. When I was, you know, becoming old enough to like, this should be my career, I remember there was a time that they didn't know if the future was going to be digital, like what we're doing now, or if it's going to stay traditional, like linear television and things like that. So when I was in university, I got the opportunity to either try experimental digital, which in hindsight is very funny.
Yeah.
Or I can go the tried and true, like, you know, linear route. And so I decided that I really love storytelling. I believe in things like YouTube and social media. So I'm going to go do digital. And in hindsight, that was the best decision I could have ever made because, you know, we're coming out of strikes, whether you're a writer or you're an actor. And right now the digital sphere is only growing. The creator economy is so huge and I've got to meet amazing people such as yourself. So all in all, what got me started was my love of storytelling, and what keeps driving me is the interactions you get to make along the way.
Oh, of course. I mean, even just like random comments on videos is sometimes really fun. You can meet people that way. Some people I had on my other show, I literally just met through TikTok comments. And it's just like, it's those random interactions that are just insane.
No, for sure. And then like you went to your first conference, I'm sure you've met people that way. And like, it's a whole different world.
Yeah. Well, and one of my friends who's a podcaster who I got to meet in person for the first time, I think I was watching your Melbourne, I think the video, the summit video and whatnot with Nick and whatnot. And it's funny how like you get to see people in person, see them in 3D for the first time kind of thing. And it's such a crazy experience. I got to do my first live interview that way. And just having that energy. And my friend who I mentioned, she's also a business person. And she was telling me how like business conferences get kind of boring, that people don't want to be there. But then you go to like a content creator place, like the podcast movement, which is, you know, podcasters, and there's VidSummit and all that kind of stuff. And all these conferences where people want to be there. They want to share the content. They want to share that experience. Everyone's so happy. I kept looking around this conference hall and everyone's just smiling and like randomly approaching new people. And it's just like, this is so much fun.
Yeah, and I feel that that alone is one of the strengths of the creator space that I've been fortunate enough to be a part of for so long too.
Well, and it's like you go around to a conference. I was literally going down some random hallway towards like the Spotify room or something like that, and I see these two people conversing just on a bench, and I look over and I do a double take, and it's Trace Dominguez from like all those science channels and education channels. And I didn't want to interrupt their conversation, so I didn't say hi because they were like in deep conversation. But I messaged them later on. And I was like, I saw you at the conference, and I just wanted to say hi. That was super cool. Like just seeing someone you've seen online for so long in real life is just mind blowing.
No, for sure. And it reminds you it's real. Like, these are real people that, like, those numbers that we all can see, they reflect a reality. And I think that that's what you got to experience. And I'm glad you followed up and let them know, because a lot of creators have told me similar things. And I think that when you follow up, you never know what can happen. Like, that's what I love about those events. And I'm sure you heard it at the one you went to, is that the worst thing you can do is keep your mouth closed, because a closed mouth doesn't get fed. So I think it's a very good call for you to message after too.
Well, and I think it's a good lesson for people who are starting out, whether you are a creator or not. Like, maybe you might be watching this out of pure curiosity and you might not be a creator. Being someone who is confident enough to reach out is a good lesson for anybody, let alone smaller creators. Because micro influencers a thing, nano influencers a thing. Like, if you're a small creator, you might reach out to a company and just see if they respond. They might be willing to sponsor you, like with free access to their tool or something like that. Or maybe you could even get a paid sponsorship if you're making good enough content, that kind of thing.
No, for sure. And what a lot of people don't know, and this before I, went and created on my own, I worked for TubeBuddy, which is a company that helps people grow and optimize their YouTube channels. So a lot of people are surprised by it. Brands don't actually get pitched that often. Not as much as you'd think. A lot of times we get asked, and there's like not a lot of thought behind, because like there have been so many times, we'd love to work with you, and I'm like, okay, what are we gonna do? And then it's crickets. It's literally, they didn't think they'd get that far. So like, you'd be surprised just having a plan. I often say, I don't think there's small creators. I think there's small audiences, and an audience can reflect the creator, can reflect what they're building, right? And everyone has to start at the same place. Every winner is truly once a beginner, right? So when you focus on thinking, what do I want to do? What do I want to get? What can I do for my community? It really helps you think, go from I'm a small creator to I have a smaller audience now, but that's not always going to be my story. So that's something I'd really say. And I really like what you were talking about there too.
Oh, Andrew, I really love that kind of example there because I didn't want to say this because it sounds egotistical, but I feel like I am a big creator just with a smaller audience. I put in the hours, but my niches just aren't that kind of like polymathy, for example, is not a big fast growing niche like tech or gaming. And so I knew that it's going to be a slow growth. That's fine with me. I accepted that. I wanted to make that content. That's what I was cared about. I wanted to help those people, but I knew that that audience was going to be small and grow slowly, and eventually it might do some gaming or creator content like this, and that'll help me grow faster. But I'm a big creator at heart, and that's like, yeah, that's really cool that you brought that to the attention, the forefront.
And I think that goes to a lot of people. They feel like, especially when you're starting again, or whether you've been doing this for a while, it's like audience does not reflect value that you can provide a brand, whether it is, like you said, taking on that free software and giving feedback. Like, there's so much more you can do despite what your audience is now. Because on YouTube, which is where I primarily create, a lot of people consider subscriber count a vanity metric. What I tend to look at is how many viewers are you getting in the last 90 days, because that's a better reflection, in my opinion, than your subscriber count. Most of the time, YouTube even says themselves, you're going to likely get anywhere between 0.5 to 2.5% of your subscribers watching every video. That's a small
It's
fraction,
tiny.
but a lot of people will return and keep watching. And I'm sure you've learned this with your writings on your blog posts over the years and things like that. There are a lot of different ways you can have an audience. They're not all going to be on one platform.
I was talking to someone the other day about this, where like on TikTok, for example, you could have a huge audience, like 300,000, right? And only 5,000 are actually going to be interacting with you. And then you could also have a small audience, like 5 to 10,000, a small, but not, you know what I mean? Small audience of 5 to 10,000, and still have that same number of 5,000 people interacting with you. And that's a much, in comparison, it's a much higher level of engagement because like that's most of your audience versus only a tiny fraction of that bigger, quote unquote, creator's audience.
No, for sure. And I think that, you have to look at it like that. And if you have a small audience as a creator, don't ever, like, a lot of times people forget it's the vehicle that you have that's going to get you from point A to point B. And right now, that smaller audience is that for you. They're investing early. There should be no, you should not think any less of the people who invested early. You should actually do more to give back to them because they believed in you early on.
Yeah. And that's like what Gary Vee and some other creators, I always say, like, make sure you reply to every comment because those are the people who are caring the most about you at first, like early on.
100%.
My next question here, and you kind of mentioned this, you mainly work with YouTube, but I saw that you had like a Medium blog, for example. So out of the three pillar content types, video, audio, and written, which one's kind of like your main one do you feel like?
I feel like, well, one, shout outs to you because a lot of people don't know I do Medium. So, like, I appreciate that you did the research. But I use video primarily. I like written form. So, a lot of people, if you understand like SEO, old school search engine optimization, then YouTube has its own form of that. I like the ability to understand that, hey, if you can understand what people's interests are, you can meet them where they're at. So, I like video first and foremost because when I needed anything, and even to this day, people look up videos on how to do things, whether on YouTube, TikTok, Reels. When people have questions, they look up videos. But I also understand that there are people out there who don't have time to watch a video, but they're much faster readers than they are viewers. So I would say in my realm, I probably would put video, then written, then audio. Nothing against audio, it's just I'm not
Take your
really.
time.
It's not my really primary focus at this point in time, but that's also just due to my audience size. I've never really had a request for it, you know?
Well, and it's one of those things too where I kind of miss a point of that question, like the favorite, like what's your favorite to make, I guess is the way to phrase it. But like you said, SEO is really interesting. And I love how you pointed out how people are used to SEO when it comes to written posts, but people don't think about it with videos. Even big creators don't always think about SEO as the actual phrasing of it. And I took, I think, Media Sean Canal's Viral Ranking Academy years ago, and that like teaches you a lot about the SEO of YouTube. And it's just fascinating to think about, like, oh, tags are great, but even just their description and how you can interact with your video. And for example, if you were to comment on my video and I like heart and subscribe it, or not subscribe, like and heart, I guess Freudian slip, like and heart and pin it and reply to it. Each of those act like engagement. And it's just crazy how those small little things like that, they all add up.
No, it's true. It's the fundamental small things that make the biggest changes. If you don't have your fundamentals or your foundation right, you're not ready for those larger scale. A lot of times people are like, I want to go viral, but are you actually ready to go truly viral? And a lot of times we're not. Like, what's your follow-up? What if your video goes viral tomorrow? What's your plan to make sure you can keep that audience interested? And doing this for as long as I have, over a decade, a lot of creators aren't ready. It took me a long time before I could even consider being ready myself. And I've never really gone truly viral. I've gone like semi-viral. A couple of videos hit 100,000 views in first 24. That's what I consider that. But when you're creating, whether you're just starting out now, have a plan, have a follow-up. A lot of times, most of what we do as content creators is just showing up and following up.
Well, and you and I both have been creating content in our own rights for a decade now. And I think that after 5 years, you kind of get enough understanding to know what to do, like if you go viral, but it doesn't mean you're prepared for it, like you said. One thing I've really spent a lot of time with is like knowledge management, like using Notion or Capacities and all these other tools to organize my content production and creating this ecosystem of content. And it's crazy to think about how a lot of big creators, huge names, don't even have a good system. They're using Google Docs still for making a lot of their stuff. And no offense to Google Docs or any of these creators, but when you're trying to scale up and really keep up with all that momentum, you need a system to back you up.
For sure. And I think it's just we get trapped in what works for us, right? Like, well, it's working so far. But I think that there should always be a sign of learning, right? Especially when it comes to your content. People are like, how do I get better? It's like, well, what is better? If I told you right now, Dustin, I want to be better, what does that mean?
Video, written, SEO, short
Right.
form, long form.
But if you want to be better in video, I often say try one thing in your next video that you didn't do in the last. If you're trying to get, if you want to get your sound design better, maybe that's something you focus on in the next video. And it's the fundamental practicing of those small things, as I mentioned, that are going to lead to one day where people are like, wow, Dustin really knows what he's doing in video. Like, have you heard his soundtrack? And then there's going to be a moment when you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. But that's the fun part of being a creator, it's the journey.
I was watching one of your shorts before this call, and you're talking about how people can get over bad video, but they can't get over bad audio. And a lot of video creators don't learn that lesson until way too late. And it's crazy to think about, like, okay, if you try podcasting a little bit just as an experiment, you'll learn a lot about audio, and that'll end up in turn making your video a lot better.
No, for sure. We actually had someone in my own Discord server. They weren't using professional mics. They just had their on-camera microphone, which was like
Whoa.
across the room. And the second they bought new mics, they saw their view count go from like maybe 100 to 200 to like 3,000. And the number one, like all their comments were, "Your audio is finally fixed." Like it became, but like that goes to show, like they have a smaller audience. Not that they're small creators, but they were just blown away how big of a response they got in just that one change.
And there is like a point of like, upgrading your camera. I don't really believe in having to get a DSLR very quick. I have a stream cam right now. I'm really excited to try to get the Elgato Facecam Pro. Like, this is something I really want to get as a nerd. I want to get that like nice middle step of the way. And it's not going to make a huge difference in my quality, I don't think, but it's going to make enough of a difference to notice. But going from like a $30 mic from Amazon to a Blue Yeti made a huge difference. And it was only a
Right.
$70 difference price tag wise. And it's just crazy to think about how audio is way more important in that case.
No, it is. Like if something hurts your ears, like we perceive a lot of times audio before we even recognize the visual. So a lot of those things matter. And one thing I like about what you just talked about there is gear doesn't have to be expensive. Like some of the lights I'm using right now cost like $50. Now, obviously, that for some people that is expensive, and I'm very aware of that. But when I started to get good quality lighting, it was like $800 for like a decent light. So like you got to remember, we've come a long way. Sometimes people are like, "Oh, $50, that's too high, like highly priced." And I think about when in like 2015 when I was spending $800 for a non-LED light I needed for a film shoot, and I'm
Oh
like,
no.
and then the bulb's like $50, and I'm like,
Yeah.
pain.
Well, and right now, like, I feel like my lighting is pretty decent. I got some glare on my forehead, but I got a greasy forehead. It's fine. But I have my curtains in front of my desk. I positioned my desk this way so that my curtains could be, if I just move them slightly off to the side, there's enough fill to get both sides pretty equally. This microphone and arm combo that I have here, I ended up getting it technically for free. And it's one of those things. It's a Blue Yeti X. It's a Blue Yeti arm. It's a pretty nice setup. And the thing is, if you think about it, I got a TV for free from my uncle. It's like a 1080p display, not great, but not bad either, obviously. And it was just a gift. He had an extra one. Here you go. Later on, I'm on Facebook Marketplace and I look at, like, hey, that's a Blue Yeti arm. It's like $50. That's a cool, like, it's an upgrade to my microphone arm. I'm like, hey, I got a TV. Would you want to trade it? And he's like, sure. I got some kids. I have my Chromecast into. I want to be able to play stuff for them. And so we made a deal. And then I saw he had a Blue Yeti microphone. I was like, hey, if I give you $20, can you give me that too? He's like, you could have it. And so like that's a pretty great deal to get like a TV for those two things. Obviously, that's not going to happen often. But if you work towards it and try to find those opportunities, I think that's what's really key.
I also love with like how you're thinking, right? You're thinking of what can I do to add value to this person that brings back value to me. That's what barter really is. And another thing that you've done very smartly, and I see this a lot with newer creators, and it's something that I've really kind of hunkered down in more recently, is that so many creators have this stigma against buying used gear or new to them gear. And I find it very fascinating because like I had a creator, they're like, "Yeah, I bought my car from someone else." I'm like, you'll buy a car, you'll buy other things, but why not your camera equipment? And granted, obviously, there are some times when you're buying, like, you got very lucky in your instance with Facebook Marketplace. I've had some not so great experiences there, but there are some websites that are very reputable that you can get used gear from, or you can just vet the person you're dealing with. And like used gear, if you are looking to get into content creation and you are saying it's too expensive, do not discount the discounts of the used gear, because a lot of times they may have used it once and haven't touched it since.
There's so many big creators who have tons of cameras and lenses because they went all out with making content with that and they want to sell their old stuff. They might have used it only a few times for a review or just to play around with it. And these big creators, they want to get rid of their stuff. I have a friend, Junaid Ahmed, who does the Hacks and Hobbies podcast, and he talks about home studio mastery and all these different like really cool things to upgrade your home studio. And he was trying to get me to get like a DSLR camera or like a full frame camera. But he was showing me like a used one on like some reputable websites. Like, that's a great idea. Like, instead of spending $1,000 on it, I spend like $400, $500 on it. And they barely use that camera at all. It's just one of those things, like you're saying, they're like, don't be afraid to use new to me stuff.
No, for sure. And I'm glad that you're practicing what you're preaching too.
Thank you, Andrew. So, speaking of like gear, let's go kind of shift gears to tools. What kind of tools are you using, whether for creation or repurposing?
Sure. So for me, I like a lot of different tools for different needs. For me, I try to find like that. I think we all want that one tool that fits all of our needs, has yet to come for me. But I'll use things like you mentioned earlier. I use Notion. We've met through Opus Clip. Shout outs to them. Like, so those are like really good tools I use all the time. I use Adobe Express. I use the Adobe Creative Cloud Suite. I use like Rode and their system for audio. So there are a lot of different systems I like. For me, I just want things that are easy, have a free offering, and anyone can do. Because again, my whole thing is like what we are doing is deceptively easy once you understand it, but hard to build the skills to get to it.
Oh man, especially when you're by yourself too.
We're not waiting on other people. Like,
Well, yeah, and like trying to get the whole team together and like editors and all that jazz. And just to even kind of put it in perspective, like I don't want to talk just about Opus because there's other tools out there obviously that we might use. But like you said, we met through Opus, and the reason why I fell in love with them was because I had been around the content repurposing space for a while, like for a few years now. I love these tools, and I had looked at like Chopcast or Recast prior, but they would find some clips in my hour and a half long interviews, but not nearly as many as what Opus did. But more importantly than that, I wanted to frame it a certain way, having like you on the top and then me right here, and so I could do it on TikTok. No tool could really do it at the time. They would just do one person at a time and switch between them. And then Opus came out, and I was able to reframe just like that. And like, otherwise, I would have to use like two different tools to put them all together, and this would have been too much work for a solo creator to do it, 100 times however many clips. And it's just like, okay, Opus, drop it in there, boom, have all these clips. So now I have literally 1,300 clips to post. It's insane.
but that's another thing, like having that volume that you can, it allows you the opportunity to not feel like you're missing, and it lets you be consistent, which I think is ultimately why I love those kind of tools, right? Like Notion helps me be a lot more consistent because I have my schedule planned out. I wrote, you can download things as PDF. I actually have wrote out my entire, like my brand guidelines, like what I believe in, my sponsor terms, their Notion, save it as a PDF, and you'd never know, right? So it's using what works for you, which is one of those like things I fully believe in. I've heard so many people be like, oh, I don't really like this tool. I like this one instead. I'm like, great. If that works for you, use it. But I'm going to use what works for me.
Well, and I spent a lot of t I had a hard time with that too, because I spent a lot of time comparing all these tools. I just
Oh, man.
Yeah, you get it. And it's one of those things where I got nerdy about it. Like, I'm using Capacities.io right now instead of Notion. I used to use Notion constantly. Capacities just has a different flavor to the same kind of aspect to that tool. And I kind of miss Notion a little bit because I want to use that calendar view. I love the calendar view. That's what I lived and breathe in. But again, like, you're using Notion, I'm using Capacities. I'm not going to convince you to try to come over here. If it's working for you, especially since you're actually making momentum, that's way more important.
And I think that right there goes to show like you're thinking of not just the tool, you're thinking of the use case of the user, which that's if you're thinking about creating content, that's something that is super important is to think about what would the users watching actually need? Because that's a trap that some creators find themselves, and I'm no better, I've been guilty of it. I've made the mistake of I want to do what I want to do and others will like it too. Maybe. Or I can look at, okay, this is what I enjoy, and there's an audience here, and they are asking me these questions that need answers. That's a much better spot to be in. And I've seen in multiple different niches, whether you are a cooking channel, whether you are a racing channel, whether you are a gamer, all of them have these fundamentals that matter, and that is super important when you're building an audience.
And what, regardless of your niche, regardless of what you're talking about, how you go about talking about it, if, like you said earlier,
Yes.
applying that lesson that you want to have shared with the world, but kind of taking the context of what that person needs and just having that empathy to think about what that person needs, putting yourself in their shoes.
For sure, especially in like newer platforms like Shorts.
Oh, yeah. So I noticed you're not on TikTok.
Yes.
Is there a reason behind that? Because I was looking around for your social profiles before this, so I could put the links in the description, and I was like, wait a minute, I don't see a TikTok.
I have to be a consumer of something. I consume YouTube and TikTok. If I make everything the job, I never shut it off. I was like, this is my place where like I understand it decently, not well enough to be full in. I just don't need another thing. It's kind of like when you are focused on what you're doing. I often, when people ask me, they're like, why don't you go on TikTok? It's more like, I need just one thing where I'm not all in. Just one.
That makes sense. I was almost kind of just thinking, if you're already making shorts, you could just like syndicate the post over there. Not like automate it, but just like reshare it, if you will.
It's true. I also think that for me, I'm doing very well on the platforms I'm at, and I don't want to segment the audience I do have any more than I absolutely have to.
That's totally fair. And I was just curious about it because it's interesting to hear other people's perspectives too. I kind of have this almost obsessive approach to just being everywhere.
No, I get that. For me, my everywhere is kind of the Discord side of things, where I've been really building and focusing on my community. In our community, we're working on a newsletter to just even have more autonomy and ownership of like the people who've, trusted us with their time, the most valuable resource. So, not that I don't think I could do that on TikTok. I just need one thing that's just for me to enjoy.
And that's, yeah, and I kind of had the same thing with like gaming, for example. I want to just have something I can do that's just for fun, kind of thing. So I get it.
Completely get it.
There is a link to the Discord description for anyone listening in and curious about that. I would like to ask you, can you share your favorite story that has happened to you as a creator?
If I were to pick a favorite story, I think for me it would probably be I go to VidCons quite a lot. It used to be for work. Now it is just because of the creator friends I've made along the way. And so around 2018, this is when I used to work at TubeBuddy still, there was this younger creator who was maybe, I believe he was 10, who came up to me and is like, I've watched all of the videos on TubeBuddy. You're one of the reasons I started creating, which is like, you do this so long, right? And like, you're just sitting there like, oh, what do I say to that? Thank you. Right. And like, so, and it's like, he has all the gear and it's like stuff I've recommended that's like not super expensive, but completely affordable. And like, he's actually doing very well. And it's one of those things where it's like, that reminded me, oh, what I say has weight. So even if you have a smaller audience, you never know who's watching it. Both, from someone who is a sweet, I'm not going to say their name because they are, they're 10, they're a little older now, but still just for their
Privacy.
privacy. But it is on my channel if you ever want to see. But the point being is that you don't know who's watching you. Both, from someone who is aspiring to be a creator or a large brand, right? And I remember that story because guess what? I used to be that. Well, I started YouTube in 2006, dating myself a little bit, but I was 11 at that time, which also will help people figure out how old I am. But I see you doing the math. But the point is like I know what it's like, and I think that is something that's so valuable. And it reminded me that while my person like at that time my personal channel was only like 2,000 subscribers, but where they knew me at was from something else I was doing, and it inspired them to create, and they're still creating, right? So that to me is probably my favorite creator story because it just reminded me that, like I said earlier, those numbers you see on the screen are real people. I see people who they're like, oh, I only got 100 views. If 100 people were in front of you right now, would you have that same thought? Probably
It's like,
not.
oh, and it's just crazy to think about just how much impact you can have on people like that. I've taught 1,000 people how to swim at this point after doing it for 10 years. And I realized
Wow.
that, like, that's a crazy amount of people. But it's so small in the grand scheme of things. And in the course of my life, I'm not going to be able to keep that same number up every decade of course of my life. As a content creator, writing about swimming or making a book about swimming, I could reach a much wider audience and teach way more people how to do it. And then you could still have that same, maybe not the same level connection, but pretty close to it by providing content around that certain subject. And I think you get that, Andrew.
100%.
I have a similar story actually to you, but in the reverse way. I was at my first conference this year. We were talking about it earlier, and I was on my last day. It was the post day where everyone's kind of wrapping up. I'm exhausted, mentally and physically, just dead. And I had no sleep that night too, so I was just completely tired. I'm barely conscious, and I'm like walking through, about to probably leave, going back to my Airbnb, and I see someone in the corner of my eye, and it's not even the story I told you earlier. It's someone else. I see Shannon Hernandez, who is a content creator around podcasting, and I had watched his stuff at least a few times in my starting journey of being a podcaster. And I do like a double take, and I like immediately go over. It's like, hey, I know you. Like I watched your videos, and it was one of those things where I got to be like a just like see the spotlight in front of me. Like that's awesome. I get to see someone that I met online but in person.
And the cool thing about that is you can build upon that meeting, right? Like, a lot of times people, what I tell people is, like, they'll see someone they like and have watched for years. They're like, oh, I can't talk to them. They don't want to hear from me. No, you're exactly who they want to hear from. It reminds them why they're doing it. So the fact you even said that, and I say this if you're watching, if you're thinking about within the context of a convention and they're clearly not, you know, very busy, say something. You never know what that can do for both yourself, them. Sometimes you'd be surprised how much farther that can go. Sometimes they're like, hey, do you have a couple of minutes to keep talking? And you're like, yes, because like you don't know where it'll go.
Well, and even just like you and I meeting, for example, we had reasons to talk outside of just the Discord that we were in, but all these different brand partners for Opus, for example, I'm sitting there just kind of like doe-eyed with like Nick Niman and you and like Ben Kaluza, who like I've seen a lot of the content. Like I saw Ben's content all throughout this year on TikTok, for example, and just interacted with him a little bit before him joining the partners. And it was just interesting to be thinking about, like, I've always wanted to interview creators, and now I meet these really great creators and I'm sitting here with peers of these great minds, and now I get to like interview you guys. I'm just so excited about it, and it's just the energy from it, and each of these conversations motivated me to make more content, kind of thing too.
And don't count yourself short. You have a great mind there too. You said earlier you're a large creator, so I'm not gonna let you not get yourself some praise in there.
Well, and the reason why I joined the partners in the first place is I was basically Opus's biggest power user. I was burning through minutes left and right.
But that alone is invaluable too. Like, some people don't understand. They're like, oh, I have nothing to offer. You've been using that tool to its the highest extent for years. They need people like you.
Oh, I broke it so many times. It's brilliant. And the thing is, they keep improving it too. Anytime I broke it, they were like so quick to improve it. I've even actually, just a little tangent, I've been trying to work with gaming content a little bit, and I've been trying to put it in there and see what it comes up with. And it's not made for it, and so it's not going to be great just yet. Like, if I get 80% usable videos from a podcast, I'll get maybe like 20, 30 from a gaming video. But it is kind of cool what it can do, and I'm trying to convince them to do more gaming stuff, but I'm really curious to see how this tool evolves.
I understand the hesitancy to gaming content. It's one of those things where it's such a gray area, legally, just in general.
Oh, yeah.
And so, not that they don't want to, and to your credit, I've tried it on a few of the people in my Discord are gamers, and they're like, very blown away with just, it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
And like that, sometimes, if you're a creator, sometimes all you have is nothing. Yeah.
Well, and on top of that too, it's more about the actual technicalities of it. Because like finding the clips for a podcast is way different than finding clips for a gaming video. And so get the technical difficulties. I just like nerding out about it. I just like pushing Opus to its limits.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yes, of course.
What's your game of choice?
Oh, so I've been playing 2 as of late. I've been playing State of Decay 2 and Apex Legends.
All right. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah. Apex is one of those things where it's like, it's a game I hate, but I love it.
I'll quit you one day.
One of these days. I did quit for a couple months there, and then I got drawn right back to it.
Oh, so you see, in gaming, you don't really quit. You just take a long break.
There's some games that I played growing up on like the PlayStation that I took a long break from and pulled it right back and just went back straight into Mega Man Legends, Legend of Dragoon, all these great
Now you're making me want to go back.
Well, I will say, like, one of my, like, on my journey as being a creator, there was 2 things that I remember. You were mentioning something about being in school and like taking courses towards this new digital media world. And I'm dating myself a little bit because basically digital media had been a class in high school at that point. It's been a little bit established. And I was taking some web design courses and video design courses in high school, learning the Adobe suite and learning how to make some content, like whatever they were teaching me in that way. But I was learning those skills. And I remember going out of my way to take those classes. Like, I planned it out from freshman year all the way up to senior year because I knew that that was going to be helpful for what I wanted to do in life. And I'm glad that you and I both kind of had that same experience. Like, we kind of planned out, like, we knew kind of where we wanted to go, and so helped lead down that path. And the other thing was Skyrim, where, like, that's the whole flip turn there. Skyrim was, like, my main motivator for building my first PC and trying to, like, I still haven't played it very much on PC. Man, don't get me started. But that skill of learning to build a computer, being a techie, that led me down this path, too. And so that one little like urge to play that game led down this path. And it's crazy how those small moments add up.
No, for sure. Like, I started YouTube on a gaming channel. A lot of people are like, what? And it's like, if they know me from that, I'm like, shout outs to you, because like, you've been around. But right. But like, so many people know me for other stuff. Like, I was in a YouTube network, so I was there when they crossed 100,000. A lot, like, if people know me from there, I'm like, okay, so you knew me from my life from like 2013 to 2015. So it's weird to feel like, okay, I can kind of almost like know where you were when you found me. And now I'm like, oh God, what was I doing? Having to remember years of what you've done, you know?
Well, let me ask you, what's your game of choice?
Man, right now I'm playing Super Mario Wonder. That one's pretty fun. It's not my game of choice, but I'm like, what am I playing? I mean, for me, the game that like made me really want to like build out a computer and stuff like that was probably Dragon Age. Mm. So Dragon Age Origins, Dragon Age 2, Inquisition, all that. So I was really wanting to just get into computer games for that, because I hated the experience on console. I came usually from more of a console background. So when you're mentioning your PlayStation times, relatable.
Yeah. I was lucky. I actually had experience with PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo, either through my uncle or by myself. But like, it was funny being kind of across the board and not being too loyal to either one and being a PC gamer. Because then you can like, you can choose which one you want.
See, that's how I was as well. Because like, what a lot of, like, this even goes to us as creators. Like, there is a double-edged sword to loyalty to a brand.
Mm.
A lot of times it ends up working out, but sometimes I'll talk to creators who only use one company because they've only ever known them, and all their problems are fixed by a completely different company. It goes back to our conversation about, you know, Notion, and then what you were talking about earlier, right? It's like, it's important to always keep an open mind. And I think that's what I like about what you do, which is like lots of different ways to learn, lots of different ways to create. I think that's so important, because if you get siloed, like a lot of the issues one of my friends was having recently was just because he was still on Canon cameras.
Oh, man.
And it's like, all of your problems have been fixed here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's why you got to keep your mind open.
One of the newsletters I made in this Pauline content series was actually, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And as creators, that's something we really need to keep in mind. Like, you do writing, you also do videos, and you're not just on YouTube, you're on Discord, you're also on I think your Instagram a little bit too, but you have multiple different platforms. You don't have all your eggs in one basket. Some people only have YouTube, or they only have their blog. And it's like, you don't have to make content out there per se around those that are different mediums. That's a lot of learning. I get it. You might not be ready for it yet, but at least have your profiles out there. At least be like exploring, send out a little tentacle out that way and like see what you can do. But like, just don't put all your eggs in one basket, because if you just rely on one platform and that platform ends tomorrow, like, you're screwed.
And you can look at a million different stories to find the horror stories of doing that. I had a friend who grew her entire following on Google+. And I was like, I remember she's like, it's going to be the next thing. And if you don't know, Google+ did not make it. That's also how I feel like a lot of Vine creators had to learn that hard lesson.
Yeah.
Right? So you never know what is going to happen. You just need to be prepared and open-minded to see other opportunities.
I was actually going to mention Vine, and luckily Gary Vee kind of swooped in and taught a lot of those Vine creators about like Instagram and exploring up new platforms. And so like King Batch, for example, was able to move off of there and kind of grow his brand. I've noticed this with TikTok too, where a lot of TikTok creators are huge. They might have a million subscribers, but they have nobody on their other platforms because it just doesn't convert very well. One thing I was going to mention too, oh crap, did I lose that train of thought? Oh, no, the idea of, like, syndicating and being on multiple platforms, too, like, I totally get why you don't want to do TikTok. The reason why I thought about it is because I just, you know, post to all of them anyways, the same content. And one thing I just randomly added was Pinterest, because Pinterest does videos, and it's actually, like, a lot of people watch videos on there. And what was really fascinating is I get 23,000 views a month on Pinterest. That's more than all my other platforms. I get maybe 8,000 on my main YouTube and 14 on my like gaming YouTube, which is not a whole lot to a lot of creators, but that's a lot for me considering I haven't grown very much. But Pinterest, of all places, is my biggest traffic.
But that's interesting, because Pinterest is search friendly. It's also heavily used. And one thing I've had this conversation with another creator, and she was telling me, like, most men do not value Pinterest. Mm-hmm. And it is huge, because a lot of what they are looking at or want, Pinterest does. And it's the same conversation we were just having, is we can silo ourselves. And like, I remember, like, I'm going to be honest, Pinterest is one of those ones that's a blind spot for me, but you bring up a very valid point. That's my own personal silo, right? It's been like YouTube, LinkedIn, you know, Discord. and lately Threads, but that's a great point of something I myself can go back and need to look more into.
Well, and that's one lesson I try to teach in the newsletter as well, is like this idea of syndication, but maybe repurposing and just even cross-posting in general. Like Threads and Twitter, for example, or Mastodon, you can post the same content and be fine. It's not going to really affect you. Like if someone's following you on Threads and Twitter, they're probably not going to be annoyed by seeing it twice. And same with like, I used to cross-post my YouTube videos to Facebook for a while before I just stopped caring about Facebook. And like, even my Instagram pictures, I try to post to Pinterest. Just have a simple automation. Like, I want to be on Pinterest, but I don't have enough time as a solo creator to be making a strong effort on there. But if I just simply automate that, I can at least account for people that's on that platform and give them content that they might like and have that automation set up and just have to not worry about it as much. Just check in on every once in a while.
I think that shows the power of the automation and why, you know, you should look at some of these things, which I'm sure Dustin will have linked, and you should definitely click on them for him so we can get some very much needed and very helpful kickback.
Well, speaking of links, where can people find you online?
Sure. You can find me at YouTube, Andrew Can with a K, so K-A-N. I always say, if I can, you can too, because a lot of times people will be like, is it Con? I'm like, no, it's just K-A-N, Can. But you can also find me at kdcc.social. That's where you can join our Discord. And what I focus on doing is making content creation affordable and accessible.
And he has a lot of great content there. And I think it's really fun to have these interviews. So I really appreciate you coming on and being one of my first guests to kind of explore how this interview process will be. Because it's different. I get to be creative with it. And by going with the flow with someone like you, it makes it really great. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
Innovators crave innovative products, which is exactly why the Polymath Polycast is powered by Riverside.fm.